And we are live. Welcome back, guys. This is the Solvable Mysteries podcast. Yo, my guy, Glenn Hykov, how are you doing, man?
Hey, happy early Halloween. So we're going to do our special Halloween-themed episode, and we're definitely getting ready over here for Halloween, though it's going to be a bit of a weird one because of what's going on around us. But yeah, I think it's a good... Yeah. I think, because it's Halloween, it's a good chance for us to kind of switch things up a little bit. But before we even get into the topic of the day, which is definitely a Halloween themed one, what's Halloween like where you're at there in Lithuania? What's sort of the customs around it, and what was your experience growing up with it?
Yeah, so basically we don't really do trick or treating all that much because trick or treating is more of a cul-de-sac type of a situation, more of a, let's say, suburban type of things where you like live in the suburbs or somewhere where you live, you know, where everyone like owns a house.
Yeah.
And there go like, and you get like your kids dressed up in like some, like, I don't know, like pumpkin or some like some scary outfits or something like that, and they go like door to door asking for like Reese's candies or something like that here, at least where I'm from, and pretty much like the majority of Lithuanians, we live like in these post Soviet Union like apartment buildings and things like that, so can't really do that. You really don't want to like send your kid in the middle of the night like trick or treating, because like that kid's like, it's a real high possibility that kid is not coming back home, you know what I'm saying? You're gonna get snatched up like for real. And in terms of like the customs, I don't think we like do the whole Halloween thing. Like the Halloween thing is more like it's definitely like in clubs. Well, obviously not this year. Like they have like those Halloween parties and things like that. I never attend those things because it's like, I don't know, I don't feel like dressing up and things like that. It's just too much of a hassle. But like in terms of like folklore, bro, we have like this craziest thing ever here in Lithuania. We have like this battle type of a thing where it's like the gypsies are like sort of fighting like the local Jews for like pancakes.
Oh. Whoa. Yeah. Wait, that's like a tradition, or it's like a ethnic conflict?
Yeah. No. It's like a tradition, bro. It's like you legit have like some gypsies against like the Jews, and they're fighting for like pancakes.
It's like for fun, right? We're not like a hate crime.
It's not like they're actually fighting. It's like the folklore.
Yeah.
We also
like a contest.
We also have like this crazy other tradition where it's like, bro, you won't even believe. Like in kindergartens, like we have like this big scary like, and I remember like even like when I was like 4 or 5, when I was in kindergarten, we would like all line up outside. They would like bring out like this big like scary old lady who's like crucified, like legit crucified, and they like burn her. It's not a real lady, she's not actually Whoa. alive, she's yeah, and they like burn her. I thought that was pretty cool. So yeah, we like,
is it supposed to be like some kind of witch burning or something? What do you think that's supposed to represent? It's not like Baba Yaga or something, right? From Russian.
It might be. I think that what they actually do there is like it's supposed to like say that we're like burning like the summer or something like that, and like the winter now is coming, so it's like the summer lady, which is like this fat lady usually, and you just like burn her. So that's pretty interesting. And then also I think we have this big tradition here where this like super like fat guy fights like a super skinny guy.
It sounds like, I hate to say it, but it sounds a little bit like Borat or something. Maybe this is what Borat makes fun of a little bit, like, in, you know, obviously over the top way, but like there's all these like kind of rustic traditions that like we kind of forget because they've, you know, like I guess in the United States, a lot of the holidays that take over are kind of like English holidays.
So tell us about your stuff, man. Like, what are you doing? Like,
I'll tell you, when I was a kid, Halloween was definitely a big deal. Because, you know, like, when you're a kid, the fall comes and school starts, and that, I mean, depending how much you like school, which I didn't, you know, kind of sucks. So it's kind of like the first holiday where something different's going on. And then I think it's for kids, it's kind of a crazy holiday too, because like everyone's dressing up and you're getting like free candy. And you know, here in the United States, you are going door to door. And like sometimes it'll be the only time all year I'd even like see my neighbors that live down the block. Like, you know, for the years at least where I trick or treated in our neighborhood. And then yeah, I think you know, and I took it pretty seriously. Like they'd even have like at school, they'd have every year they have like the Halloween parade, you know, where everyone sees the costumes, people dress up for school. And then even like people would have like Halloween parties. Like I didn't go to a lot of parties other than birthday parties as a kid, but like that would be like, I know I went to at least two or three different Halloween parties as a kid. So yeah, I mean that it was kind of a big deal. The school would even have like a Halloween festival or something. And then when I was older, I wasn't too into Halloween anymore. It's kind of weird because I'm kind of a party pooper when it comes to Halloween stuff. So even like when I worked at Warner Brothers and places like that, where people would definitely dress up and they'd have contests and stuff and take it real seriously, I just it's not me.
Nah, it's not, yeah.
It's hard. Yeah, you know what I mean? Maybe I'm just not a person that likes to call a lot of attention to myself. I'm a little bit, you know, other than my YouTube show and my photography and everything, I'm kind of shy, so I don't really like maybe a lot of attention on myself, so I almost never dress up in costumes. But I guess I feel a little weird about other adults that do, but you know, don't take it personal, you listeners, if you're one of those people that loves costumes. It's just not my thing, and I think maybe I'm a little bit embarrassed for myself. And I cringe a little bit. I think also I get a little bit disturbed sometimes when the costumes are too scary or too disturbing. But that's, you know, a different topic, I guess. I'm not religious about it. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it goes too far. But yeah, I mean now even like there's still Halloween's still like a massive, I feel like it's bigger than ever, even than when I was a kid. Like when I was a kid, costumes used to be pretty simple, and now it's like, you know, before COVID, like, you know, now you have like entire stores that just open for the season selling Halloween stuff, and then they close down, you know, for the rest of the year. So
Yeah.
yeah, it's definitely like a big cultural thing here. And I mean, the one good memory I do have is always watching the Charlie Brown cartoon, the Charlie Brown special. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Nah.
Sort of like a yeah, it's kind of like tradition here was that they would show like it would be one of the few times I get to watch TV at night. So yeah, you know, I think for me, it's a kind of the marking of like maybe the beginning of really the real beginning of fall. And then, you know, it's kind of the beginning of like a bunch of holidays in a row, right? Because then for Americans, we have Thanksgiving next month. And then, you know, obviously Christmas or Hanukkah or what, you know, what you might celebrate for winter, like your winter solstice holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I have some good memories. I even remember a couple different years in a row going trick or treating while like the hills, the mountains beyond were like on fire. So like we're in some neighborhood getting tons of good candy, and then you look like a mile or so away and you're like, ah, that mountain's still on fire. Hope they put it out soon, because
Yeah.
this is fire season in California. So always. So
Well, it's pretty much all year round, right? Fire season.
you know, yeah, I mean, it's always like, yeah, it's true, because sometimes it's even been in the winter. But yeah, the fall and summer when it gets really bad here, and yeah, including Halloween. So then I guess, you know, the other thing about Halloween is, this is interesting, because you know, we talk about paranormal topics here and mysteries and things like that. And what I was remembering is when I was a kid, and I used to talk with other kids, like, I don't think that, like, you know, you talk about things in common that you find interesting. I feel like when I was a little kids didn't really talk about UFOs or even like monsters or thing, you know, like other mysteries. But the one mystery that I think kids tended to believe in, and tended to, at least when I was a kid in the 80s, tended to be really focused on, maybe because of the kind of movies that were out there at the time, because we're talking about the era of like the slasher films and poltergeist and things like that. I feel like ghosts were a topic. Ghosts still seem, I mean, even with my daughter now, when kind of her fears and anxieties about things and what she gets spooked by, I feel like ghosts are a thing that have always been really popular with people, probably forever. The unexplained, you know, the idea of spirits and things like that. And I think the ghosts are the kind of mysteries, maybe it's the first set of mysteries that kids are really interested in. You know what I mean? Like kids don't really care about true crime that much, at least not till they're older. you know, maybe they care about something interesting or horrible that happened. But man, like when it comes to ghosts and things like that, I feel like kids, like that's like hobby number one sometimes, you know, for like their mysteries. And maybe that's why it's always been a really popular topic. So I don't know. I mean, just before we get into the case, I mean, how do you feel about ghosts? Was that something you ever believed in as a kid?
I think, like, you know, one of the reasons why ghosts are actually a topic that kids actually relate to a lot is because of the cartoon shows, I feel like. Because back in the day, you know, like the Scooby-Doo. did we say the same? Did we see the show at the same time? Nice.
Isn't it amazing? They made those friggin' Scooby-Doo cartoons in like the 70s.
Yeah.
And no joke, they're like the best propaganda ever.
Scooby-Doo. We have like other stuff as well, and I think, you know, I think just like, yeah, like ghosts are really easy to make into like a cartoon and things like that. So I think, you know, the Casper, like the friendly ghost, we had like that as well. So we had like a bunch of these episodes. Yeah, personally, I don't really feel that strongly about like ghosts, but I'm not like super skeptical about it either.
Were you afraid of the dark when you were a kid?
But not ghosts. I don't think ghosts. I think like or maybe like ghosts. I don't know, man. I was just like scared of the unknown. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it was ghosts. Maybe it was like monsters. Things like that. Yeah. What about you, man?
Yeah, I mean, so like, you know, in a house or even an apartment or whatever, you know how like when the temperature changes, so like at nighttime, everything cools down. And even still now that I'm an adult, like I'm not afraid of the dark.
Yeah.
But like I'll hear noises and I'm like, dude, I'm old enough to know better. And I'm like, even the freaking TV makes noises at night where I'm like, stop it. You know what I mean? Cause the house will settle at night. And we don't, you know, we have like probably 30, 40 degree difference in temperature at the day sometimes. Here in California, I'm sure it's way worse in other parts. Yeah. So like the house makes me, so like when you're a little kid, you don't really understand that about materials contracting and expanding. So like if you're a little kid, like my room used to be way across the house. My parents and my sisters slept upstairs in other bedrooms. And then my bedroom, for whatever reason, I think they're trying to get rid of me, was like, way across, I mean, way further than you would think across the house in terms of like, you know, down the stairs and across the house and way in the far corner of the house. And it would be dark and like, you know, your eyes are playing trick on you, you know, and you're like 5 or 6, 7. And like, yeah, so I used to think that I would hear and see things just because, you know, like your eyes will I used to like hide under my covers and stuff. But I think here's the other thing before we get into it is there's like actual ghost stories in my family. So, yeah, there's been a couple, I'll make it pretty quick, but supposedly when my grandfather passed away, when I was a little, when I was like basically a toddler, my parents said that I said the next day, like he passed in the night, I guess, like, you know, a state away. So over in Oregon.
Yeah.
And then my parents said the next day, I said that like a man came in the night in the room. And then, like, unfortunately my mom's side of the family's had some, kind of tragic deaths of people dying early, like in accidents and things. So, you know, like there was things like her brother passed, her brother was hit by a car and he died. And, they were all upstairs in this, once again, a really big house upstairs. And, they were mourning him, you know, like right after the funeral. And then they heard this big loud clattering noise down from his room, down in the basement. And this mug, which they still have, it didn't break. This mug had somehow flown off the shelf. Like, this isn't a place that has earthquakes, right? Had flown off the shelf and hit the ground and made all this noise. And then there was other stuff, too, where, like... other crazy stuff, too. Like, my grandmother in the 1990s, so when I was in college, my grandmother passed, the same, you know, the husband of my grandfather. And two different weird things happened. One was my mom and my aunt were up in that same house to kind of take care of the affairs of thing, you know, like take care of everything.
Yeah.
You know, in lieu of her death. And they were sitting on a bed together watching TV and the bed started shaking.
What?
Like like someone was shaking it. Yeah, and they thought maybe it was my grandmother playing a joke on them. And then I'll tell you, by the way, I stayed when I was like a early teens. I stayed in that same bedroom, the one downstairs, my uncle's, whenever met.
Yeah.
Bedroom, and I was, you know, having heard all these haunting stories and ghost stories, I was so freaked out. I had my eyes, I was like 13, had my Jesus. Eyes like so shut, just like, please don't let anything happen to me down there. But it felt weird down there. But the other weird part was me and my now wife, we were dating at the time, and we were taking care of the house while everyone was up at the funeral.
Yeah.
For various reasons, I didn't go to the funeral because I couldn't get away from school. And we were upstairs, and my dog, who like didn't really like me that much, the family dog, comes like whimpering upstairs from downstairs. She wasn't allowed upstairs, and she comes whimpering upstairs, and she would not go. We were totally freaked out because we saw a scary movie that night, and Event Horizon. And we were already freaked out, and then the dog was acting weird. So like just stuff like that where I was like,
bro, but that's crazy. That's insane.
It's not like not like people. I mean, other than like when I was a toddler, maybe not really like people appearing and doing, you know, not like outlines of things. But I guess between that and other stuff I've seen,
jeez,
I've seen one or two YouTube videos where like, yeah, there's a lot of fake stuff on YouTube, and there's a lot of people just trying to get hits. But there was one or two things where like it still gives me the chills when I think about it. So I guess what I get frustrated about. Is that when you try to look up something like ghosts on Wikipedia, you can look up anything else. No joke, dude. You can look up Bigfoot. You can look up anything else that's paranormal. But ghosts are the one thing that Wikipedia does not give any respect to. You know what I mean? Where like any kind of conspiracy theory you can look up, and it'll kind of like, yeah, say, oh, that theory is real or it's false or whatever. But at least it'll spell it out. If you try to look up ghosts,
yeah.
It treats it. It doesn't even give it the respect that it would give like a religion. Well, you have other things that are supposedly maybe imaginary, maybe not, you know, things that people believe in that you don't have absolute proof in. And it'll like, you know, like whatever it is, whatever kind of belief you have, it'll kind of spell it out and outline it. But ghosts are one of those areas. That's why it was even hard to research the episode for today, because it just kind of mentions in passing about, you know, the haunting stuff. It's really interesting how it's so hard to, you know, yeah. What I mean, like for something that we all believed in as kids, and there's still plenty of people right now that for sure, I'm sure we'll get in feedback, we would get 1,000 comments if we asked people to talk about their ghost stories, but right. Wikipedia pretends like it never even existed, and that's something that I find just fascinating on the Wikipedia side. But okay, so I think I know we've given kind of a long preamble, but you know, with that being said, today we're gonna take a little bit of a change of direction.
A detour.
And that's we're more than a year in. We're probably long overdue to do a good old fashioned ghost story.
Exactly, man. Before we jump into it, I think for everyone who's listening to this podcast on the podcast apps as well as on our YouTube channel called the Solvable Mysteries Podcast, the first thing I want to do here is play a news clip from, I think, a little bit over a few years ago. It's about a mansion called the Lemp Mansion. So just for everyone to get introduced into this case, I'll just play the clip and I'll bring us right back after the clip is done, and then we'll jump right into the ghost story, man. This is gonna be the Halloween special, by the way. It's episode 69, so it's a big milestone. You know, 69 is definitely a big milestone episode for everyone. So yeah, let's jump into it. I'm playing the clip right now.
I brought a little teddy bear from home. I was doing a film with a group called the Booth Brothers. And I set the teddy bear down on the stairs. And we went about, and they were interviewing me, and they were talking, and I looked up on those stairs, and the teddy bear was up in the air, swaying back and forth, as if a little boy was playing. The house was built in 1868. Charles Lemp died in 1949. Charles was an elderly man when he committed suicide. He was suffering. He had bone cancer and crippling arthritis, and he had lost probably a will to go on. He also, if you believe in the haunted aspect of this house, and he was affected by all the spirits that are here. These are all my theories, you know. There are 9 identifiable spirits here in this house, and one of them is a spirit that I used to call the Stinky Man. First time I encountered him, though, he told me to get out, my house, get out, and stuff like that. So, and I didn't go, so he wasn't too pleased with me. What draws me now is the third floor. And the third floor, because there is a spirit there that I feel such empathy for. He's a little boy. He was part of the Lemp family. And he hides up there. He's very scared. Very scared. Afraid of people. Now, these windows are on the floor, as you can see, which were ideal for a little boy to play because he could people watch. His favorite thing, to people watch. And then if he'd see a kid, he'd tap on the glass like, oh, look at me, play with me. When they did look up and see him, they called him names and would still stick to this day. Unfortunately, particularly in this area, when I encounter the room where I know that Zeke is hiding, it can be very sad and it weighs on your shoulders, almost like a weight has been, that you sink a little bit when you come into this room. Now, some of the other rooms you go into, you might feel altogether different. I caught movement out of the corner of my eye. I went, look at that. Because my teddy bear from home, it wasn't a magic teddy bear. I brought it for Zeke. I thought he might like to play with it. And I just set it there. It was up in the air like a little kid was going, wee, 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 just like that. So that was a moment that was very sad because Zeke is here. He's a boy that is very so challenged that I cannot reach him to help him cross over. And he is looking for his mother. Being skeptical, there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think. I think there's room for everybody's, their opinions. And it's okay to be a skeptic.
Right. So that was a news story that the local St. Louis news station did about the Lemp Mansion. First of all, I want to ask you, man, have you ever heard about the Lemp family? Because I've looked into it. They're like St. Louis royalty at this point, right?
No, you know, it's a good question. I feel like if I ever ran into anything about this stuff as a kid, it must have been just like individual anecdotes where, you know, someone would say, oh, X person took a picture of this on this stairway. So, but like, no, I during the research for this case, I learned a lot more about this weird confluence of like brewing families and how apparently all these different famous beer brands of like, you know, mostly mediocre beer came out of St. Louis during about the same period.
Yeah, I mean, let's jump into it, man. So we are looking right now at a top 10, according to Life magazine, a top 10 most haunted house in the United States of America. It's the Lemp Mansion. It's in St. Louis. I have a little bit of information here about it. I just want to read it real quick. So this house, the mansion, was actually built in 1890, according to the St. Louis tax records. In 1911, the house underwent major renovations, including conversion of some space into offices for the Lemp Brewery, which then ceased all production when it was sold to the International Shoe Company at auction in 1922 because of the prohibition, because, you know, breweries were going out of business, especially if they had like lazy owners, which, you know, evidently was the case here as well. The Lemps lived in the house until 1949, so the last Lemp was Charles Lemp. He committed suicide in his bed in this house. In 1950, the mansion became a boarding house. So that's not good for a house, you know, for the infrastructure. Throughout the next decade, it lost much of its ornate charm. The construction of Interstate 55 during the 60s, so basically a highway, led to the destruction of much of the grounds and of one of the carriage houses, because back in the day when this place was built, everyone was like still doing horses. They didn't have cars. Also, I will mention that although many of the original details of the home have been replaced, there's still some remaining pieces. The Lamp Mansion is currently a restaurant and inn owned by the Pointer family. Tours, both historical and haunted, are offered, and it is a venue for murder mystery dinners, theaters, and Halloween parties. There are other nearby buildings by the historic, some of the buildings are a historic house called Châtillon Demnail House. I think this dude was like Demnail was like Demnil or something like that. He was like one of the founding fathers or something like that. I didn't really look into him all that much, and I think we could get into the actual family, the Lemp family, that I guess lived in this house. I don't know, man, you wanna take it away on that end, and I'll add something to it as well.
Yeah, so I'll just jump right into it. So it's interesting. Apparently, you know, so just to take a step back, the U.S. has had several different waves of migration. So, you know, like when we here in the U.S. celebrate Thanksgiving next month, we're going to celebrate some of the first immigrants to the United States, which were like, you know, people from England and people from across the channel that were religious separatists. But then in the years after that, we definitely had a lot of different immigration routes from other parts of Europe. So one of the big groups that came here were, we had a lot of Germans come more in like the 1700s and 1800s. There was a lot of German immigrants, and St. Louis, Missouri was one of those places that had a lot of people from that part of the world. And because of that, I think, you know, like before, you know, when you had people here mostly from England and Scotland and to some extent Ireland, the tastes were around that kind of food. But actually, you know, that changed where, you know, people from Germany, well, they want German beer. So it's interesting that apparently this is the reason why you have so many, we're going to be talking about breweries a lot for various reasons. So apparently the original patriarch, the original member of the Lemp family was Johann Adam Lemp, who was from, I hope I pronounce this right. He's born in 1798 in Groningen, known as Polheim, Germany. He became a naturalized citizen in 1841, so actually pretty late in his life. He arrived in the U.S. in 1836, so that's still pretty relatively late. He was, you know, pretty much in his 40s at that point.
Yeah.
Settled in St. Louis and became a grocer. And as extension of the family grocery, he started selling his own vinegar and beer. That makes sense because vinegar is essentially just, you know, like kind of an offshoot of alcohol. And then eventually in 1840, he starts focusing mainly on the manufacture and sale of beer, where he forms what's called the Western Brewery. You know, it became really popular because, like I said, there was a lot of German immigrants and you know, people whose maybe parents were German immigrants in the area. Apparently this was one of the big trends and changes in American beer, was that it went from being like English lagers and porters to German lagers. So that's interesting to know, where all of our very mediocre beer macro brands come from, that were kind of the mainstay of, you know, our drinking here until kind of the past maybe 20 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's what I thought was interesting, but it made sense. So the business was doing well, and, you know, you think about it, like, this is almost 200 years ago. They didn't have, like, ice makers, right? Like, I mean, there was a way to make ice and to make other things, but if you wanted to keep things cool, it was a major challenge because there's no electricity. There's none of this kind of cooling technology we have. So, like in the old days, if you wanted ice, like, you would get ice from lakes and places like that. And
God damn.
You know what I mean? You'd freeze water and then, like,
yeah,
you would store up a lot of it. So what's interesting is one of the natural properties about putting things underground is things that are underground, like, there's less heat underground. It's actually even, there's even special, there's actually people in the desert right now, like here in California and Nevada and places like that, that will take like an RV and bury it and then live underground in the RV. If that makes sense, you know what I'm saying?
Not like, really.
Because it's cooler. Yeah.
Like, how does that work? Wait.
It's weird. What happens is just, at night everything cools down because the sun's not shining. And what's interesting is when something's underground, it's essentially shielded from the sun, right? It's shielded from the warmth. So it's a form of...
So they drive into a cave, right? Something like that?
Well, the case that I'm saying, like, yeah, you would, if you didn't have a cave, you could kind of make your own, basically, by digging a huge hole in the ground and then, you know, digging down and then dumping like a trailer home in it and then covering it back up.
Jeez.
You know, maybe reinforcing it. And then you make like a little, like, apparently this is actually a method that's been done for a long time, is a way to keep a house cooler. This has always been known as a way to, you know, people notice that, like, hey, I built a room underground, it's cold. Well, the crazy part about the Lemps house and other houses in the area is there were all these natural caves underneath. So you could tunnel down to these caves and then like build rooms down there in storage and use the caves, and the caves would stay cold. So if you had things you needed to keep refrigerated, because, you know, often the temperature in these underground caves can be quite cold. You know, it could be, if it's not freezing, it's at least, you know, getting close to it where it's like a natural refrigerator. So that was one of the first ways of naturally refrigerating things. And because of this, it turns out that there's always this Lemp household. There's always been a lot of construction underground in these caves. So case in point, the cave below the house and kind of their buildings. So the cave right below the Lemp and Chantel de Menil house and Lemp Brewery, the caves were developed for that. So
I just want to quickly, before we continue on with the story, I just want to jump quickly to the Google Earth map, just so that people could sort of get, obviously, like, this is like a modern time Google Earth right now that we are looking at, but you can see like the Lemp Mansion right here. As I've said, it's right now we have like this interstate 55 or whatever, and so obviously now has like a parking lot. It's these things were not there, you know, back in the day, but like, let's just take a little look. Like, this is the Lemp Mansion. And this is like the Lemp factory. So they built their mansion literally like I don't know, like 50 meters away from like this loud, nasty brewery. So, you know, things were really different back in the day, where like, you, I guess, like William Lemp, you know, the guy that I think we will still talk about, wanted to build his mansion right next to the factory because he was a good businessman. You know, it makes sense for him to do that. But I think the other family members were like, nah, this is like depressing, you know, to like look out the window and see like these big like chimneys, like all of these smelly things coming out of the brewery, because the brewery is gonna make some stinky ass smells, I assume, you know what I'm saying? So
you know, case in point, I mean I actually don't live that far now. I only live a couple miles down the road from a Budweiser brewery here in the valley. And you know, emission, there's been all these new laws about emissions and stuff, so I think it's like way less stinky than it used to be. But I remember when I was a kid at my elementary school, which is also, you know, about the same distance away up a different direction, all the time I would smell the brewery. You'd smell the hops or whatever it is, or the yeast, I guess, something in the air. So like, I can only imagine living right next to it. It must have been kind of brutal. It makes you wonder, when we talk about what happened to the rest of the family, how much of that was environmental. And just a little footnote here, by the 1860s, there were 40 different breweries in the St. Louis area specifically taking advantage of those caves along the Mississippi River. So it must be some kind of geological feature that's helped formed by the river, maybe when it moves, because rivers move around a lot. And the Western Brewery at the time was one of the most successful. So for a while they were like the you know, the Zuckerbergs or the Bill Gates of brewing in that area.
Yeah,
they were doing well. But as you know, it's a common story for a lot of very wealthy families in America and elsewhere. You know, the success and the luck doesn't hold out forever. You know, things come in waves. So Adam's son was William J. Lemp, was born in Germany in 1835, so apparently probably right before they moved here.
Yeah.
And he probably grew up here in the U.S. as a child, or at least a young man. Completed his education at St. Louis University, worked at the brewery until he left the company to form his own partnership with another brewer. So just lots of brewing going on. Yeah, wow,
like a whole bunch of, like,
imagine like that before the internet in America, there was beer.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the internet of the 1860s, apparently, just getting everybody drunk. So yeah. And then he enlisted in the army, it looks like for the Civil War, 1861, made it to sergeant, and then he married a woman named Julia Feckert, and it was actually Julia's father, Jacob, so his father-in-law, was who built what is today known as the Lamp Mansion.
Yeah.
So that's interesting little sub-note. But in 1862, I think his father, Adam, so the original Lemp, died. Yeah. In the middle of the Civil War. It's sad. And he returned to the brewery as owner and operator. I guess he was able to get out of his army duties. In 1864, he began building another brewery. There's a lot of breweries in this story. Above the caves where they'd been storing their goods. And I mean, can you imagine? You must have had control over multiple breweries. So at one point, Western Brewery is the largest brewery in St. Louis, and then the largest outside of New York.
I just want to quickly mention one fact about the Lamp Brewery. It supposedly covered 5 city blocks. So it was,
wow.
And I think they are definitely referring to this brewery right here. We still have like the Lamp name on it. So yeah, it's definitely a large brewery, you know. It's it definitely has that, like, I would say retro feel, like that, I don't know, man, late 19th century factory feel about it, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a big brewery.
Yeah.
And it's said at its height, it was apparently the 19th biggest brewery, I believe, in the world or something like that.
Wow.
So you know that they were making that beer really well in there. And I will just mention one thing about William before we continue on with the story. William was actually a really good businessman. Like, he was a really smart dude. It seemed that he was the master of efficiency, if you know what I mean. And just the way looking at it, you know, it's the building complex looks really neatly planned out, you know what I'm saying? Because we have, like, this thing right here. What the hell is this thing right here, you know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe this was a different operation or something like that, but this is just, like, a really nice, neat, efficient complex. It seemed that William was really good at, like, efficiency. Well, that's, you know, that's a real German right there.
Yeah, that's definitely the German stereotype is order, efficiency, and engineering.
And ghosts.
And then it's interesting, too, because to my internet topic, said that even, like, they were even good about seizing on, like, these big current, you know, kind of future technology at the time. So railroads become really important during this point in time. So they actually... Like, not only did he do something that was really rare at the time, which was to do both the brewing and the bottling in the same massive facility, they started trying to also use refrigerated railway cars, which that must have been expensive and, like, super new technology at the time, because railroads were already a pretty new technology. And to have refrigerated railway cars, I mean, that's like, when you think about, you know, these days there's, like, refrigerated trucks. And those are, like, kind of normal, but those are still also pretty cool technology where we get groceries across the U.S. So because of this, they were able to actually become not just a U.S. brand with national reach, but actually became, like, an international brand where it was sold worldwide. So I'm assuming they're putting it on ships that also have refrigerated compartments and taking it to other places. So, I mean, that's pretty amazing. So, yeah, I mean, they were on top of the world for a while. And then, you know, I mean, there's... I don't want to make this show too much about brewing. So there were some other business moves they made. And at some point, this is William Lemp Sr. we're talking about. His son, William Jr., becomes vice president of the Western Brewery The William J. Lemp Brewing Company, which was what Western Brewery becomes. And then his other son, Lewis, becomes superintendent. Now, what's interesting is there is a fourth son, Frederick. So there's, you know, everyone's having a lot of kids back then for sure.
I think he had like 10 kids. That's the thing about this case. He had 10 kids, but we only know about like five or four of them. Maybe they died or something.
Yeah, and you really had to have a lot of kids back then because, you know, like people would die all the, you know, you'd have infants that would die all the time. You would have, you know, you'd have like some, you know, like some kind of horrible flu or something come and like kids would die. I mean, infant mortality and the average lifespan, you know, people died from just different things all the time. So that's one reason why you would have a ton of kids because you might lose half of them by the time they reach adult, you know. Yeah. Adulthood. So, what happened was there was a fourth son who I guess looks sounds like he was kind of grooming to eventually take over the company, but this fourth son, Frederick, was his name.
Yeah.
Had significant health problems and actually died of heart failure due to kind of complications of these different health conditions. So unfortunately,
he was only 28. By the way.
Oh wow. Wow. And that's, I mean, so you must have, yeah, had some real, real issues. And unfortunately, I think this was like kind of the beginning of the end for William Sr., where I guess for some reason he took it especially hard and his mental health started to decline. Maybe went to major depression. And then here's the other crazy part was he had his best friend was Frederick Pabst. So Pabst is, Do you know that brand of beer, Pabst?
I think I've heard about it. Yeah.
Yeah, Pabst Blue Ribbon. So Pabst is like another, like, super mediocre, super budget beer brand. I laugh because when I was in college, I used to buy it and drink a lot of it because it was like super cheap. It was like as cheap as Miller Lite Miller, but like probably it had a little bit higher alcohol content. And there's a movie called Blue Ribbon, where it's kind of a punchline of a not really a joke, but like a famous line from that movie. So that was like his best friend, and his best friend died, Frederick Pabst. So, you know, apparently these beer people knew each other. So he took it really, really badly. So, you know, two major deaths, and he unfortunately killed himself on February 13th, 1904.
In the Lemp Mansion.
Yeah, the Lemp Mansion. So this was, unfortunately, the beginning of a string of unfortunate deaths. And you know, it's really probably worth prefacing that they do say that suicides tend to kind of run in families, and they're not really sure how much of that is environmental, like maybe having a relative commit suicide or a father or a mother commit suicide. Maybe that makes you think it's you know, not such a bad idea, or you know, kind of put the idea in your head, or maybe it's just a symptom, might just be a symptom, an environmental or, you know, genetic symptom of depression running in the family. So it may be that this is the outward sign of a serious strain of, you know, depression that runs in the family. You know, depression other than situational, because obviously when people around you are dying, that doesn't mean you should kill yourself, but it certainly, it's natural to be depressed when bad things are happening in your life, but, you know, I'm not going to do my public service announcement this time, but, you know, don't ever think that it's a good idea to commit suicide. But unfortunately, it looks like this started to become a pattern in this family.
Exactly. Exactly. I will say one thing about William Lemp as well, that after his son died, he actually still was going to the office every single day, but he became more reclusive. He wasn't really talking to the employees almost at all. And he was like just, I guess, doing his own thing, you know, like all cooped up in his room in his office. And then, you know, one day he just like decides to, I believe, shoot himself in the head in his office. And the office was located at like the Lemp Mansion. So yeah, that was a pretty crazy thing. And this, I think this is the part of the story, you know, when William Lemp Sr. kills himself, William Lemp Jr., who wasn't really that much of a businessman. He was more of a spender, you know what I'm saying? He was not more of a maker of the money. He was definitely a spender of the money, and you know, all he knew was like splashing out in St. Louis. So yeah, I think we can get into like his reign of the company, and you know, the following downfall of the Lemp Brewing empire, and you know, the crazy events that happened that pretty much led to the haunting nature of the house.
Yep, definitely. And I'll try to expedite a little bit so that to make sure we have time to cover the haunting and you know, its full glory. So, you know, after William Jr. took over, his nickname is Billy. So he married Lillian Hanlon 5 years earlier to that. And they'd moved to their own, to a new home at 3343 South 13th Street. It's a lot of 13s in this story, interestingly.
God damn.
You know, his wife was known as the Lavender Lady for her lavender-colored wardrobe and carriages. That's interesting. She was pretty focused on that. She files for divorce in 1908, charging Billy with desertion, cruel treatment, other indignities. And you know, it's kind of a big deal, divorce back then. And, you know, she ends up getting custody of their only child, William III.
Could I just step in for 1 second? She actually almost lost that divorce, and she barely won the custody of the child. The reason being because William Lemp actually did a genius move for a Victorian man in court. He actually brought out a picture of Lillian smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
that was a no-go, yo.
That was it shows you how much time has changed. Yeah, this is definitely before no-fault divorce. It's right. I remember that. That was considered like bad parenting that she was. I mean, now it almost would be again, but it was like for a sexist reason back then. It wasn't for the health reasons. Yeah. It was just considered unladylike. So, yeah, it's interesting how things went back then. So, you know, after the trial, Billy built a different home. There's a lot of talking about homes and houses in this thing. But here's the thing. So in the early 20s, America, for a while, outlaws alcohol. And obviously that your main product becoming illegal obviously is not good for business for all kinds of breweries, even though they could sell to Canada and places like that. But, you know, Canada can make their own beer. Canada is not nearly as big as U.S. It's not a big market. So, you know, yeah. it tremendously eroded the financial viability of these things. So it's like if you were Mark Zuckerberg and all of a sudden they outlawed social media in the United States, I mean, what are you going to do? So this was a tremendous strike against the family. They had to sell a lot of these facilities to probably people that were not in massive debt or didn't have all this overhead. You know, they sold the trademarks and the companies. The brewery complex got sold at auction to a shoe company. So at the end of 1922, literally 2 days before the end of the year, on December 29th, Billy shoots himself in his office, a room that today is known as the front left dining room of the house. Okay, so that's sad.
That's pretty sad. Before we move into like the next, I guess, the last few people and then jump into the hauntings, I don't know if you would have mentioned this fact about William Lemp Jr. He, remember those caves back in the day? I wouldn't say right before the Prohibition ended, but a few years before the Prohibition ended, a new technology in the game has actually emerged which was pretty much massive fridges, like refrigerations, and that actually meant that the caves below actually lost its initial purpose of like storing and keeping the beer cool. So those caves, you know, back when business was still going good before Prohibition, William Lemp Jr. was like, yo, I need to use up these caves for my own personal pleasure. So he was like installed like a bowling alley, a pool. I was thinking a bowling alley in the early 20th century. You know, I wonder what that was all about. They probably didn't have those like sideboards for like little kids. I will say that he told the Lavender Lady when they were still married, because you know his whole thing was like, I don't really want to deal with my wife right now, because you know she does all of this lavender stuff, you know. He probably got tired of the lavender and things like that. So he was like, I'll give you $1,000 every day, but you have to spend it, like $1,000 back in the day money. So that's like 10 G's or like 20 G's in today's money. And you have to spend it all on shopping every day. But if you don't spend it on one day, then that's it. The money stops. So, you know, the lavender lady had no other option but just to go and shop literally every single day to spend that $1,000 back in the day money every day. And during that time, William Jr. Would actually like have these like crazy prostitution parties with like other brewers, other like influential people in the caves, you know, in like the caves below his house. And then he actually, you know, since he was involved with a whole bunch of other women, he actually had a kid called, well, I think his name was like Zeke Lemp, but his nickname was the Monkey Faced Boy, because he had Down syndrome. And I will mention the last thing, that this Monkey Faced Boy is one of the most famous ghosts in the Lemp family mansion currently. But there's actually no records of this Zeke Lemp actually existing, but people who worked for the Lemp family back in the day, there are records that they state that, yep, there was a little kid locked up in the third floor, because he was locked up. They were ashamed of him, and there are records that he actually had like Down syndrome, and he was actually spotted looking from like the Lemp mansion's third floor, like those little small windows, the Victorian windows. He was actually looking at other kids banging on the like window, and the kids would like call him names when they saw him and things like that. So he's haunting the place right now.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it was stigmatized. It's pretty sad to think. And apparently his burial site just says the name Lemp on it.
Yeah.
It doesn't say his name. Yeah.
Crazy. Like Lemp. Just
yeah,
Lemp.
Yeah. Just like totally buried. I mean, you know, it was treated shameful for different reasons, both
one
the
thing,
illegitimacy.
One thing.
Yeah.
One thing I want to mention I found very interesting throughout my research. This monkey-faced boy, he actually apparently, at least to some credible research, died in his early 30s. So I don't really know why he's still referred to as a boy. Why is the ghost sightings of a boy? Wouldn't there be a ghost sightings of a 30-age man? Because he died in his early 30s, you know what I'm saying? And I don't really know how you can keep a man locked up in his early 30s. Maybe he had like really serious needs, you know, where he literally couldn't do anything.
Sometimes, so I have an in-law who has Down syndrome, and sometimes he was like almost 30, and he was still getting mistaken for like a pretty young person. So sometimes people with Down syndrome, their growth and body shape is sometimes more similar to a child. So the people are not people that don't have a Down syndrome person in their family. They don't really understand like the maturity. The syndrome has some aspects of it, and it's actually a collection of syndromes. So sometimes you're more likely to almost look like an adolescent or a small child. And also sometimes, frankly, someone with Down syndrome gets infantilized, where because sometimes they have the mind of an infant, they're sort of still referred to as like the baby.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my take on it, just from like, you know, my in-law, Cruzito. You know, he's definitely still treated like he's a baby, even though he's, you know, in his early 30s, and mentally he essentially is. But yeah, no joke. I mean, I was in Vegas with him some years ago, and like, you know, they were like, is he even allowed to be in this part of the casino? And I'm like, dude, he's like 30. Yeah, he can be here. And they wanted to see his passport and stuff. So yeah, maybe that could be why. But whew, we still have a lot of suicides to get through here. So let me try to expedite it. There was another another, there was Elsa Lemp, who was the other, one of the other children of William Sr. And she had kind of a, another troubled life where she was married to a, you know, like a, someone who was president of a metal company, brass and metal company. They, you know, had their relationship and, they separated in 1918. She files for divorce in 1919. And then, you know, she said it was a hard marriage on her mental and physical health. But, you know, once again, like kind of a long trial and, you know, divorce was not an easy thing back then for sure for anybody, especially for women, with the kind of hoops they would have to jump through legally to get separated. And it says here that she shot herself while in bed at their house at 13 Hortense Place. Is that the same 13 Hortense Place, or is it another 13?
It's another, man. It's another.
Wow. What's all this? I mean, I'm not even superstitious about 13, but that's a lot of 13s. So that was actually interesting because some people thought that it might have been a murder masked as a suicide, and there's even apparently a film about this. So that was yet another suicide in the family, and yet another 13. And then William Lemp III, the only son of Billy Lemp, he, you know, did some more stuff with the license the Lemp name to another brewery. So that's why, confusingly, there was another William J. Lemp Brewing Company, probably because the name was so famous. And this is, you know, well after Prohibition has been repealed in 1939. And this has been a little bit of back and forth. And he, you know, he had tried to go off and do some other stuff besides brewing, like he'd trying to go into banking and finance and politics. Never married, lived with his dog in the mansion and two servants. He ominously had sent a letter in 1941 asking that if he had ever, in case of his death, he should be cremated. And his body should not be bathed, clothed, or changed. It's an awful lot of
instructions, right?
Attention. Yeah, instructions to that. I don't know why they would bathe or do any of that stuff if they're going to burn your body. And maybe that's, oh, because there was going to be no funeral and no notice. That to me seems like a sign of depression, by the way. That, you know, that kind of, oh, don't give any attention to my body. I'm not worth it. That seems sad. And 8 years later, no surprise. Another suicide. He shot himself in his head, leaving the following suicide note. And this is, it says, St. Louis, Missouri, May 9th, 1949. In case I am found dead, blame it on no one but me. And then signed Charles A. Lemp, or C.H.A. Lemp.
Yeah.
Charles A. Lemp. So, okay. Finally, the only surviving son of William Sr. was Edwin, who we mentioned earlier. You know, once again, he had another, he retired at Cragwold, maybe it's pronounced Cragwold, I don't know, the estate he built overlooking the Merrimack River in 1911. And, all these cool houses had an observation tower. I always think that's cool when I see those old mansions that have observation tower. Like, I want an observation tower if I ever make millions or billions. He's a pretty interesting guy. The place had two servants' houses, collection of birds, antelopes, sheep, yaks, buffalo, and other animals. It's almost like a hearse castle. After his retirement, he dedicated himself to many charitable causes, primarily the St. Louis Zoo. Sounds like he was a pretty cool guy. And he didn't kill himself. He actually died in 1970 at the age of 90. And his final order to his caretaker was to destroy his art collection and family heirlooms. WTF. Wow.
Damn.
I don't know if I can agree. I mean, that's...
I will say this.
Yeah.
It almost seems like, you know, William Lemp Sr. ran into something in those caves, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like it was cursed.
God damn, this family was like shooting themselves in the head left and right. And I guess we could jump right into the hauntings. I think we have just about time to do it. I have a few interesting videos So I know, man, this is just like a tour of the Limp Mansion. So as you know, the Limp Mansion these days is a tourist attraction. Like you could go and like eat dinner and then also like see ghosts at the bathroom. So that's a fun place to hang out, I guess. So let's do it. After the death, I'll just jump into it right now, of Charles Limp. So basically, the dude who was the last person who lived in the Limp Mansion, the mansion was actually sold and turned into a boarding house. Along with the nearby neighborhood, the building began to deteriorate, and the haunting tales began after the last Limp died. I think that's when, you know, the Limp family really started appearing as ghosts. Residents of the house pretty much complained of ghostly knocks and phantom footsteps being heard throughout the house. As these stories spread, tenants were hard to find for the boarding house, and it continued to decline to a near flophouse status. In 1975, the old mansion was actually saved by Dick Pointer. That's a good name, man. And his family purchased it. Immediately, they began to renovate the building, turning it into a restaurant and inn. But this is the crazy part. Workers within the house often told stories of apparitions, strange sounds, vanishing tools, and the feeling of being watched. Frightened by the hauntings, many would leave the job site and never return. God damn. We also have Limp family burial site. Something about the burial site, I'm not really certain what that information is. It's apparently some apparitions happening there. Pretty much the attic of the house is said to be haunted by William Jr.'s illegitimate son, you know, the monkey-faced boy. This poor soul was born with Down syndrome, spent his entire life locked in the attic of the Limp Mansion. Strange occurrences are often witnessed on the third floor level of the mansion. The face of the boy has regularly been seen from the street, peeking from the small window of the mansion. Ghost investigators have often left toys in the middle of his room, drawing a circle around them to see if the objects have been moved consistently. When they return the next day, the toys are found in other locations, which is, I don't know, if I saw that, I'd be like, yo, this is something right here. In the downstairs woman's bathroom, which was once William Jr.'s personal domain and held the first freestanding shower in St. Louis, so they were like had all the new stuff in the house. Many women have reported a man peeking over the stall. On one such occasion, a woman emerged from the bathroom, returning to the bar, and stated to the two men she was there with, "I hope you had an eyeful," because she assumed that they were like looking at her while she was like taking a piss in the bathroom. But the two men quickly denied ever having left the bar. And actually, the ghost is said to be the womanizing William Jr.
Pervert ghost. My God. It's like it's
damn.
not bad enough. It's like haunted and freaking you out. It won't even give you privacy when you use the restroom.
Exactly, man. Exactly. We have another interesting video of like some people basically going and investigating and things like that. So while it plays, I'm gonna finish up the story here. William Lemp Sr.'s room. Actually, guests have often reported hearing someone running up the stairs and kicking at the door when William killed himself. William Jr. was known to have run up the stairs to his father's room, and finding it locked, began to kick the door in to get to his father. You know what I'm saying? So that's pretty crazy. Maybe they are forever reenacting that day. Also, several years ago, a part-time tour guide reported hearing the sounds of horses, of all things, outside of the room where William Limp Sr. had kept his office. However, when the tour guide looked through the window, nothing was there. This area north of the mansion, and now used as a parking lot, was once utilized as a tethering lot for horses. The mansion has been featured in a number of magazine articles and newspapers, and now attracts ghost hunters from around the country. Today, it features a bed and breakfast with rooms restored in period style, a restaurant featuring fine dining, and a mystery dinner theater. Tours are also available at the mansion. The Limp Mansion is located Yeah, pretty much we don't really need to get into the where it's located. So that's pretty much the ghostly things. Right before, I don't know, man, there's, I mean, you know, like since this is a more of a reactionary episode as well for us, and you know, we still have like a good 15 minutes before we wrap up. You know, we're looking at a really interesting footage. Like for everyone who's watching, listening to this podcast, or not just for to the audio, I suggest you go in for these last moments to our YouTube channel because we're gonna be reacting to some cool ass videos. So right now we are seeing some stuff. I don't know, you want to describe what's happening? I think these guys are like, oh, you see that anomaly on the right corner? You see something right there? Oh, whoa, that's a dust particle, right?
Yeah, that's like the funny. All right, I'm gonna, like I said, I go back and forth on this ghost stuff because sometimes you see stuff that's like I've seen other videos where you see like an actual ghost or someone walking, and that's freaky. It doesn't do anybody any good, ghost people, ghost town hunters and fans. You gotta not like claim like dust motes or ghosts or floaters or whatever. So that's where it gets like unfortunate. It's like I'm sure from what you described, it sounds like there's enough weirdness going on that like I think if unfortunately someone goes and they're like, well, I just spent, you know, $500 getting to this place. I'm gonna see a ghost. Like yeah, like case in point, something just floated in front of the camera, but like it was clearly, you know, I think people underestimate how much dust is in the air. Like, that's why
Yeah.
you're sneezing all the time, right? Like that's
Exactly.
because stuff goes up your nose. But then, yeah, when like other weird stuff happens, let's see, like
Oh.
this video we're watching. I mean,
Oh,
that seemed a
look at
little.
that. I think that's the ghost of William Sr.
The dust of William Sr. Oh yeah, but no, but then the thing is, there would be sometimes
Look,
there'll be
look,
like
look,
weird,
bro. Look, look.
yeah. I mean, maybe I'm looking at the wrong thing. Oh yeah, I see what they're saying. There's like weird
Yeah.
darkness and stuff. It's so hard to tell because, like, the tech you're using sometimes, I mean, they're like odd
This
miss
is
and things.
2015, no? No, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, oh, I see what they're saying. Where there's like, yeah, and it's so hard sometimes to tell whether it's just like the weird. Like software, you know what I mean? That's like interpreting the light because this is all,
Yeah.
it's not like it's film anymore, right? It's all like,
Digital, right?
yeah, digital like CCDs and like sensors basically. And like, yeah, sensors do weird things, but like, this isn't a totally discount. Someone's going, like, I'm sure we'll get some angry comments of people that are like, how dare you? There was a clear outline of a ghost and you
Bro, bro,
two
bro, bro.
dummies.
Let's jump into this. I don't know if you could see. I think I will zoom this in for you a little bit. As you can see, like you could probably see this picture, right? So there's actually this is one of the pictures I almost forgot. I really want to talk about this thing. So I'll just give a quick backstory. I'll guess you can react to it. So this photograph was actually sent to some other ghost investigators by a guest of this mansion, a restaurant that you know it has became right now into a restaurant. This person managed to capture an apparition wearing turn of the century style clothing standing at the top of the main staircase. So basically, people believe that this ghost is that of Julia Fakert Lemp, so I think senior's wife, in 68, Julie in 1868, Julia's parents built the Lemp mansion as their summer home. Julia had a strong attachment to the mansion, and in 78, it was sold to her husband William Lemp Sr. Many people have seen the spirit haunting the second floor of the house, mistaken it to be the ghost of William Lemp Sr. or Charles Lemp. It actually is like the wife of Sr. Personally, the ghost investigators believe that Julia's ghost that haunts the second floor is the ghost of Julia, pretty much. People are believing that it's a ghost of Julia. No, what do you think about this picture? Like, there's a clear outline of like
Yeah,
something right here. It looks
I
like
definitely
a
like to see some good analysis, or yeah, it'd be interesting to see if people zoom in on that. I mean, it's a lot better than the like the mist and the dust particles that
Yeah,
we're
we're
seeing.
also sorry if I like cut you off too soon, but we also have another cool video that I actually didn't show you before. I just want you to react to it. So I'll just play this clip to get a better sense. And I don't know, man, if you could just look at it, just make a reaction. So, you know, we are like actually doing like reaction videos right now. So that's pretty cool. So basically, for all of the audience who is not watching this YouTube channel, we have a video footage from a birthday party happening in the Lamp Mansion. So basically, there's a whole bunch of people at the restaurant. It seems like they have pretty good food. Now, dude, pay attention at the candles. Just pay attention. Okay, so right now we have like some chit chats. Some people are laughing. Right now, just look at the candles. For everyone, just keep looking at. There's a birthday cake with like candles. Look at the candles. Just keep staring at the candles. Don't take your eyes off the candles, man, because you might miss it. Like, okay, look, look, look. Just keep looking at the candles, bro. Wait, she's still looking at the pie. I mean, the cake. But one of the candles. Look, look, look. Oh, damn. Okay. Look, look, look. Keep looking at the candles, bro. And some real. This is only a minute long video, so we're gonna get to the good point really quick. Just keep looking at the candles. Let's keep looking at the candles. She's gonna do something. Look at this. Whoa. Whoa. One of the candles just randomly blew itself. So I don't know, man. What do you make of that?
That's weird. The one thing I wish, I mean, there was area. I wish I could see what the two people, you know, there's like two, I gotta say, there's two mischievous looking kids on the other side of the table. So
Yeah.
part of me, I mean, like assuming, so if you assume that everybody in the scene here is, you know, like an honest actor, I'm sorry, I mean, I'm an actor, like an honest participant. Then that is weird. I mean, that was because I was watching it, and it looked like, yeah, some kind of wind or something was some draft was blowing the stuff around. But then that one went, phew, that
Yeah.
was pretty strange. Yeah,
That
it's a
was
little eerie.
That's a
Yeah,
weird, bro.
that was strange.
We also have, I don't know, man, just some people doing like some tours. So I guess we don't really have any. I think those two, like, yeah, I think you could find some better examples of hauntings in this house than I have. Like, I guess the picture is pretty famous. That cake thing, I don't really know how famous that is. I just like found it. Yeah.
What do you, I mean, what do you, it's worth asking, like, I mean, I, despite me, you know, like I'm kind of famous at this point in some of these episodes of kind of crapping on, you know, being skeptical, but I mean, I will admit that like having been in a house that, oh, I forgot to tell you the family house that I mentioned that it had a couple of different haunting things, up in Oregon. Part of what was in the house because my grandmother was old and she had like this burglar system put in even in the 80s that had like the motion detector. And what was like eerie was that freaking motion detector thing, it would make like a noise, right? And like one of the rooms connecting, it would go off like all the time and there was nobody in it.
Oh, but bro, the same thing here. I've seen videos of the Lamp Mansion ghost
Yeah.
investigators who experience the same thing. They put like motion detectors all over the place, and you know, no movement, no nothing was happening. But actually, these motion detectors, they wouldn't make a noise, but they would like start
They would indicate, right?
flashing bright color, like bright blue or something like that. Yeah. So what do you think about it? That's ghost?
Yes, I mean that's the thing. I do find. I guess that's why I get so frustrated because I'm such a like a Wikipedia oriented person because I really love Wikipedia and I've always loved researching things. So I think as a kid that grew up, growing up as a kid and even in the 80s and stuff. You know, as a little kid, finding all these awesome ghost books and hauntings, and I'd spend a lot of time reading about like the Amityville horror and things like that. Which, like now, you know, they're just sort of different stories about some of the stuff. But like, the part of me really wants to like get some kind of plausible explanation because there is. I keep on thinking there's something to this. Like, where there seems to be some kind of weird thing that goes on where I don't know if someone dies unhappily or dies with strong emotions or. For some reason, maybe just wouldn't be as peace, or even if it's just a transitionary period, on to because I don't know what I feel. You know, I'm not a religious person. I know you're not super religious either, but I can't help but say that I don't know for sure about anything beyond this life. I keep on, you know, the fact that there's so many of these ghost stories and tales and accounts, and even in my own family, a little bit of that going on where, you know, it does seem like weird things happen that are not totally explainable and seem to be kind of related to, like, people we know. I mean, what are your thoughts about something like this? Like, do you find it plausible that, you know, maybe there are, you know, especially with families like this where it seems like there was great emotional disturbances and a lot of unhappiness? And it's sad, too, right? Because these people were, like, I mean, my God, that story you told where the guy, she had $1,000 a day to spend. And those, I mean, that's massive amounts of money. I mean, that's, you're just like drowning him. That's almost like that movie Brewster's Millions.
Yeah.
Like that, that's just crazy. Like that's a crazy amount of money. And then I mean, it almost seems cruel, right? Like that almost seems like something you would do to someone that loved to shop to like make them hate shopping. Like you're putting stress around shopping, right? Because like, how do you even spend? I mean, it must have been great to be like a business in the area, right? Because yeah. Like this lady's coming and raining money on you every day. Like you, but like as like the person that had to spend that money, like yeah. I mean, maybe
that's work. That's like a 9 to 5.
Yeah, it's a freaking job. I mean, it would have been hard. I mean, try spending.
Yeah.
As someone working in a business. Try spending, you know, $20,000 a day on like business related expenses. It's crazy. So, I mean, that alone would make you maybe haunt, you know.
Yeah. To answer your question, I don't really, you know, I don't really put that much thought into ghosts. I'd never actually experienced a ghost myself. Funny enough, when we actually decided to do a Halloween special, like literally the same day, I thought I saw a ghost because I was like staying at the apartment alone. I was, you know, so I was walking into the kitchen. The kitchen was, the lights were off in the kitchen, and I, no joke, like saw a crazy like orb in the kitchen, like just in the middle of the kitchen. I was like, I was so scared. I immediately turned the lights on. I was like, what is this? Like, we decided to talk about ghosts and I see the only ghost sighting of my life. I was like, what? But then it actually was a dirt speck on my glasses, because I then turned the lights on and I was like, oh wait, I can like reenact this sighting as much as I want. And I was like, oh, it's only a speck. Oh, but it was pretty crazy, man. I was really scared. Yeah.
You know, I will say one of the best stories I ever heard on a podcast, I can't find it, and unfortunately, friggin' Reddit's rules wouldn't let me ask it to the group, but on Joe Rogan's show, I want to say like probably 4 or 5 years ago, if anybody knows, please tell us in the comments, one of his guests had an awesome ghost story about when he was growing up. I want to think, say it was Bobcat Goldthwait or someone like that, but I couldn't find it in those episodes. Anyways, the story was the house that they were in was like definitely haunted. Where like every night at the same time of the night, there'd be this weird knocking in like the roof above the stairs, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like this pattern of knocks up and down, but like not stuff that could be explained by the house contracting or whatever. It was like, it almost sounded like a person doing it, but it was like on the roof, right? And they went outside, nobody's on the roof, right? So like this thing would happen every friggin' night, like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, this pattern of knocking. Always the same time of night.
Jeez.
And finally, so then the spooky part was, it gives me chills even thinking about it. The spooky part was they finally had a priest come and do an exorcism. And they said that night, nothing happened.
What?
But then like but so they thought, oh, it's fixed. But then the night after, it's like the thing had a freaking temper tantrum and like went like a 500%. Of what it normally
Jesus.
Did, and like went like had like a crazy like riot, and then apparently it like went away.
God damn!
I can't. I wish I could. I know for sure it was Rogan, and it was around, I don't know, 2014, 2015 that I heard the show. I'm pretty sure, maybe 2013, something like that. If anybody knows, please tell us what episode that is, because that is an awesome. You know, and it was one of the best ghost stories I'd ever heard, period. And it was anecdotal, right? I mean, you have to be, like, kind of trust.
I don't know, man. The stories that you've said in the beginning, like, about all of the, like, the cup.
Family stuff, yeah.
The shaking of the bed, the cup. Like, dude, how are you not a paranormal investigator at this point? Like, nothing that happened to me in my life.
Yeah, I mean, and our family still has the cup. It's a Howdy Doody mug. And we still have it, and like, yeah, it didn't break, And it was, that doesn't even counting like people showing up in dreams, like telling people to kind of settle down because they were too sad, because, had people kind of dying before their time in my family a couple different times. But yeah, anyway, it's kind of crazy. And I don't know. I feel like we probably owe our audience another ghost episode where we go into like one of the super famous ones. But I'm really kind of looking forward to the reactions to the episode too, because I think based on reaction, I think maybe our audience can help guide us to the ones that are really mysterious to them, but maybe also give us some of their own feedback about what they think is going on.
Right. So I think we'll be wrapping it up right now. This has been episode 69. I just want to say that, it's a big milestone episode, like 69, like not everyone gets here. And I will say that, guys, leave a comment down in the comment section. What do you think about this show? Do you like us talking about like ghosts and stuff like that? It has been a less structured type of an episode. I know we have something planned for next week. Like, we'll have to like really prepare heavy on that thing, because that thing is like a crazy thing. I think we'll be revisiting a case, but you'll have to find out on next week if we actually do end up doing that. So leave a comment in the section. Do you like us talking about ghosts and things like that? Do you believe in ghosts? Do you have any ghost experiences? But like, really do that in the comment sections, because we're going to be talking about them on our next ghost episode. So do that. And what ghost topics should we cover next? We have a few, but we really want to hear from you guys. What do you want us to talk about next in terms of ghosts? And if you want us to talk about them at all, so this has been episode number 69. I mean, thanks, man, for joining us today. And I can't wait for the next week case. Episode 70 is going to be a big one. So I'm really excited for that. And guys, as always, just stay safe and peace out.